This morning I'm going to open up, I was just thinking here, sitting there listening to that thing, song. And I want you to turn, before I put on the board there, to the book of Hebrews, the faith chapter, chapter 11. I'm going to read a few verses. Probably about the first 8 or 9, something like that. Now I'll stop. This is going to be a lead-in or a scripture reading for what I want to say. Then I'll sit down. Now faith is being sure. Verse 1 to about 8. Now faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. This is what the ancients were commanded for. By faith, we understand that the universe was formed at God's command, so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible. By faith, Abel offered God a better sacrifice than Cain did. By faith, he was commended as a righteous man when God spoke well of his offering. And by faith, he still speaks, even though he is dead. By faith, verse 5, by faith, Enoch was taken from life, so that he did not experience death. He could not be found, because God had taken him away. For before he was taken, he was commended as one who pleased God. And without faith, it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe in what he exists, and his rewards for those who earnestly seek him. Verse 7, by faith Noah, when warned about things not yet seen, in holy fear, he built an ark to save his family. By his faith, he was condemned. He condemned the world and became heir to the righteous and becomes by faith. Last verse I'll read. By faith Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive his inheritance, obeyed and went even though he did not know where he was going. And by faith he made his home in the promised land. I'll stop there. By faith. By faith I stand here this morning as an elder in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and proud of it. This morning I put 2 verses on the board. Proverbs 24, verse 16, the first part. And this is the text that I'm going to be basing on what I'm saying about today. 24:16 in my Bible reads this. For though a righteous man falls 7 times, he rises again. Although a righteous man falls 7 times, he rises again. I can relate to that. We'll talk about that later. Revelation 3, what have I got there? Revelation 3, 2, the first part reads this. And I read from Revelation 3, where is it? Here, verse 2. Wake up. Wake up, it says here in my Bible. Strengthen what remains, and it is about to die. For I have found your deed. For you have preserved and have endeavoured hardship for my name, and you have not grown weary. They are my Bible texts today that I am going to be speaking about this morning. This morning is the culmination of a program that I wanted to present here today, and I'll sit back here. An idea was given to me a few weeks ago when I did this particular presentation in a secular venue in Hamilton in front of about 80 or 90 men one Monday night. And it was, I spoke to our pastor and he said, well, why not do it again here? Because you have something to say. Something that said to me weeks ago, when I was first approached to do this particular performance, and the title of today's presentation is Never Give Up. Never. That is the title. Never Give Up. Never. When I was asked by the people to do this, I balked at the idea. I didn't want to do it. But then he said to me, Ronnie, that's what he called me, he says, tell us about this. Tell us about this. So I said, all right, I'll tell you about this. And so I have titled my service Never Give Up, Never. And I'm going to focus on the first 10 years of my life until I can finish. If I finish earlier, I'll expand it. But basically, the first 10 years was the catalyst in which I had the most help. I'll start this by the way I started the other presentation. And I'm going to ask myself some questions today as I go through this, and I'm going to answer them truthfully in front of you all. The first question I'm going to say is, what is my name? My name is Ronald Frank Burnett. I am 71 years old, of age. I am single, and I am a Seventh-day Adventist, and I am proud of it. I have only ever been in two churches in my 71 years, one in Sydney at Concord, and one here in Hamilton. That's not bad for 71 years. 71 years for two churches is good. Now, I've been lucky to be blessed by having a family. Naturally, I wouldn't be here otherwise. That's a good thought. All right, I'm going to ask myself a question. Who are you? Tell us about your birth and your very early life. Your parents, your brothers and sisters. Where do you come from? All right. I was born late one night, about 11:15 hours, on the 11th of June 1944. Sydney was under siege at that time because the war was on. Most of Sydney's coastline, above the Heads and below the Heads, that's other words from Manly north to Palm Beach, Gosford up there, and south from Bondi right through to Wollongong, was all covered in barbed wire, because that's where the enemy was thought to come from. And they did. They had military people up there guarding the place 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All right. I was born in a Seventh-day Adventist hospital in Wurunga called the Sand at 11:15 in the evening. Now, I was very unfortunate because I was in the right place at the wrong time. Why do you say that? Because I was an accident at birth. An accident that happened caused by a doctor and a nurse that were careless in the delivery of me. Caused my mother a lot of trouble. She came off very hard. I was born with what you see now. And to explain this a little bit better, I'm going to put my hand up. My left hand can go everything. I can put my hand up, I can shake this, do all that. Everything's fine. Straighten the arm out like that. See? Look. Straight out like that. You can do that. No worry. Put my hand, I'll do anything. Pull that down to the car. This one, however, this is a bit different. I have a permanent situation where my arm is like this, up, down, here, up, down. I can do that. That's all. I can't straighten it out. Physically not possible. I can't do anything here other than that. I can't bend this finger. I can't do this. I can't do that. One side of my body is about that much different to the other. Both in my shoes, and if you look at me in my undies, which you don't see, it's visible in the knee. I'm very lucky to have found a photograph taken about 1945 in Sydney at Lynfield, showing me as a baby. And if you look very closely at it, you can see what I'm talking about in the right arm and the left and the right leg. They're shorter. When I was born, my mother tried to hide me in a shawl. She was ashamed of me. She need not have been. But it took one of my aunties or one of my grandmothers, soon woke up that there was something wrong. What was the problem? After I was born, my father was called away to the war, and there's a picture of them here, taken in 1970, my parents, there they are there, I'll show you closer later on. There. My father was in the war. He nursed me once or twice after I was born, and I didn't see my father for nearly 18 months after that, when the war was over. I was a war baby, don't forget. A war baby. And that was a different thing to a baby boomer, because I was born during the war. There's a difference. In those days, you kept quiet about anything that was wrong. And my mother did just exactly that. Have you got brothers and sisters? Yes, I've got a brother, younger than me. He's a dental surgeon living in northern Tasmania. A dental surgeon still practicing. I have a retired sister who lives in Melbourne and or Warrnambool, not Warren, depending on what the situation is. Where do you come from? I was born into the church in Sydney, in Fox Valley Road, Warrnambool, when the sand was the old sand down the hill behind the church. The early part of my life had some problems. I'm going to ask a question of myself now. How did you cope as a young child? I didn't. I'm about to say something now that's probably going to shock you, but it needs to be said. My parents at a young age were told they'd be lucky if I saw the age of 10 years old. 10 years of age. I'd be gone. They didn't hold much hope for me. Now, this was a problem that would have racked my father silly. Knowing my father the way he was, that was like waving a red flag at a bull. Excuse the expression. I've got a boy that's not going to live till 10. We'll see about that. Right. How did I cope as a child? I had a GP doctor in Concord. And he was an old gentleman, I say that, because he had a vest and two chains with watches, you know, all the men's vests. And he had a surgery, and you went into the surgery and you sat on a table in the window, because they had a little conclave and you looked out over Major's Bay Road. And if you were a child, the first thing he'd say, have a lolly, boy, to ease the tension. Well, he got me through the first couple of months or years of my life. But I then was referred to a orthopaedic surgeon in Macquarie Street, Sydney. Now, this was a vital thing, because this was a trip for me about every 3 months. Into Macquarie Street, Sydney, into town, up from Sydney Hospital, and where all the problems were last year about December, you know what I'm talking about. just up the road round the corner. And I had to go in there about every 3 months. And as a little boy, about knee high to a grasshopper inside, I was probably petrified. Because once again, you got up on the table, and he'd poke and he'd prod and do this and that and smack the leg and do all this sort of thing. Then he'd tell you to go and sit outside the door and he'd talk to your mother and father. And they'd come back and say, you've got to come back in another 3 months. Have another look, see how it's going. Because as I was growing, things were changing here. I was changing. I coped. But the trips to the doctor and the specialist had been taken. I had to have it on a regular basis. A regular basis. This was something that I dreaded. I'm going to ask myself now a question. How many times were you in hospital in the first 10 years? That is more than an overnight stay. And I can relate that I was in hospital 4 times in 10 years. Twice for the same operation within 6 months. The same problem because it was operated on by the surgeon in Macquarie Street and it didn't go wrong. And I was operated on twice in Lewisham Hospital at Lewisham. Catholic Church. Catholic Holy Hospital. Very nice. Enjoyed it. Learned a lot there. I was in hospital for 10 years. 4 times in 10 years. Little did I know that something else was about to happen in my life that was even going to change it and make it even worse. As I was growing up, my leg was growing and I needed to have some work done on my leg to help me about my walking. And when I was about six, I'd say, this surgeon had a rooms in the old Children's Hospital in Pimlott Bridge Road, Camperdown, down from Royal Prince Alfred. And one day he said to me, or my parents told me, we've got to take you into town. Yes, you're going into the doctor's, surgeon. You are going to have a caliper put on your leg, a brace put on your leg, here, from about just below the knee, right down to the foot. I had to have special boots built with the metal bars coming down the side and the T around the top. These boots were built by a bootmaker in Sydney, a specialist bootmaker that dealt in children's boots. And this caliper was put on me this day and I nearly cried. Oh dear, that hurt. I looked at my father, I looked at my mother and said, why me, Lord? I would have thought that. Why me? What have I done to deserve this? Little did I know that I was being helped at the time. My father was there in the hospital and my mother. I don't know whether my brother and sister were. They were there, brother and sister. They were younger than me. And on the way out of the hospital, after the doctor had got me to walk up and down, you know, about 10 times, well, you'll be right, get used to it, you're right. That was the way. The surgeon came in and signed me off and off I went. It was in the tradition of those days when I was put then on a bus. And I was taken out into Pimlott Bridge Road as a boy. And I got on the bus. Now, I've only found this book this week. Looking like that. Sydney double decker bus. Well, those of you in Newcastle know exactly what I'm talking about because they were up there too. And I found out this was one as I was a boy in Concord. This bus still exists today and I used to ride on that as a boy. That's nearly 50, 60 years ago. And the bus still exists today in Heritage Country. I want to talk about the bus a bit more later on. I got on one of them and I managed to get my leg up into the bus. Okay. I had short pants on. I remember that. And we were taken then, my father took me into the city, parents, and they took me to lunch. And they took me to lunch to a place that was called Farmers, now Grace Brothers or Myers in George Street. And you had to go down the steps. This particular day the lift wasn't working and I had to go down the steps with a caliper on for the first time. That was okay. I got down to all right. Had dinner. Everything was fine. The lift wasn't working. Now, whether this was by providence or whether the Lord had seen fit that he was testing me out, I don't know. The lift wasn't working. When I had to come up out of the basement, I had to go up these stairs. A set of stairs with about 30 steps. 30 steps, mind you, in the caliper. And I was in trouble. My mother, sister and brother were in front of me, and my father was behind me, pushing me, making sure I could get up, you know, one leg at a time to get up the top of the stairs. When I got up to the top of the stairs, my first reaction to my father was, "Dad, I want long pants. I want long pants." In the middle of the day, Myers, Grace Brothers, "Why do you want long pants, son?" "So I can hide this. So I can hide my caliber, so nobody can see me." My father was a wise old man. He said, "Did you see the people coming down the stairs against you?" Yes. He said, "What did they do?" He said, "They saw your predicament and they moved around you, didn't they?" "Yes, that's right. Yes, that was my predicament." He said, "Now, think of this." He said, "If you had long pants on," he said, "they wouldn't see that. So, you're not getting long pants." That's the end of it. Lesson taught. Very simply, no. A message to my head. Why do you want long pants? "Because I want to hide it." My father said no. The next thing that I had to do was, of course, go to school. And I went to a public school up the road, round the corner. And I was there from about 53, 52 to 56. 1956 I left. During that time, I had one stupid thing that I did, because I thought once again I was smart, very smart, and I paid the price for it. I had seen other boys get a drink bottle, I won't mention the brand name, but they come from America, CC, about that big, with a lid on it, cap. And I had seen these boys come up to the brick wall, go down the lane I had, put the cap and the bottle on the side of the brick, bang the cap, and open the bottle. Smart. Oh, I could do this. Brilliant. A little bit of money, I went and bought a bottle of CC. Came round to the brick, put it there, whack. Well, the next minute, I had blood streaming down the hand, all the way down there. I had too much power in this arm to be able to get the bottle top off. Whack. I broke the bottle. About 8 stitches later, I was taken to the doctor, you know, the one, "Have a lolly, kid, boy." My father come in from work. I didn't get a whack, I just got told, "Well, you learned a lesson there. You don't open the bottle that way, have you?" Once again, the father of the kid. I was lucky. The father of the kid. Did I have any other little problems in life that I can remember that caused a bit of trouble? Yes, I do remember one. I was thinking about this last night. Crosslands had a camp, an Adventist camp, years ago, down from Hornsby. And they used to take the JMVs and all that down from Hornsby, one of the walls down there, somewhere around Hornsby, down to Crosslands. And one day, they came up, like, we were put on this barge. And the barge was about halfway up the river, up the tributary, and guess what? It sank. With about 45 people in it. Children. And all the clothes and everything else. I was all right, but it gave me a bit of anxiety, didn't it? Anxiety that I didn't need. I was safe, but it just gave you a little scare. Tell us about your school days. How did you cope with your situation and your problem at school? I had a problem at school. It was caused by me being cack-handed. That is, i.e. left-handed. That's what it's called today, cack-handed, you know, left-handed. I have a thankful ally in Marcel Beck, because I couldn't write without blotting everything. As I'm writing, everything smudged. I was hopeless. I could not write to save my life. Could not write to save my life. Failed at everything. Couldn't write. A six-year-old at school, I was going nowhere. One night my father came home and said, the headmaster wants to see you in school tomorrow with Mum. As a little six-year-old, five or six-year-old, you can imagine my knees were going like this. What have I done? Why have I got to see the headmaster? When I got up to school the next morning, about 9 o'clock, my mother took me up there. My father had gone off to work. He knew what was going to happen. I went in, and there's the headmaster sitting there, and I've still got his reference at home from the man that wrote it. Yes, I've still got that. And here's all the teachers sitting around the desk. And they said, Ron, we're very concerned about you because of your situation. You are not progressing the way we would like it, because they had a curriculum back in Concord West School in the 1950s, and they had about 150 members, children in the school, public school. We understand you've got troubles. We have a solution for your problem. And the solution was a ballpoint pen. Marcel Beck. In 1953, I was one, or 53 or 4, I was one of the only children in the public school in Concord West that was ever given a ballpoint pen and was allowed to write on paper anything I was doing. Now, up until that time, I failed everything. Writing, everything. I was a complete failure. And my father said to me, he said, you can have anything you like for Christmas. Dear, this Christmas changed my life forever. You can have everything you like if you pass your writing exam. Now, I couldn't even get 20% writing. In those days, you had to be 50% or more to get a pass. You know, 80, 90, 100, whatever. That was it. When I got my little reports went home, it was, 10% for writing and 20% then. They could see it was a failure. Right. You can have anything you like for Christmas, provided you pass your writing exam. Pass, that means I had to get 50. Christmas time came, the school came, and I sat for my examination, little Ronnie, you know, pen in hand, off I went, you know. Oh, I was going to put right on the board here. There was one sentence that they did make me write down. The quick brown fox jumped over the lazy dog. I had to write that about 50 times on a bit of paper. Now, you know where I'm coming from with that, because I've just said every letter in the alphabet. The quick brown fox jumped over the lazy dog. That was my practice. 50 times. Just write. Doesn't matter. Practice. And hand it in. Simple little thing like that. Then the writing test came. And all the other subjects I was doing, English or whatever it was, I don't know. I was no good at arithmetic. I still not. Algebra was, well, whatever. I could never understand that. When the test was over, the end of the days, these teachers marked your writing and all, marked your papers and everything. I gave you a little envelope, and of course you had to take that envelope home. As a little boy, you know, a little boy, you take your envelope home, and you'd open the front door, and you wonder whether you're going to get kicked from one side of the house to the other, and you'd put it on the table. You'd have your tea and you'd disappear. My father always come home late. When he opened up the letter, whether my mother had opened it up before, I don't know. But from 20% writing to 74% in a period of about 3 months, 74% passed was pretty dash good. Then he said to me, "You can have anything you like, Ronnie. What would you like for Christmas?" "Dad, I'd like an electric train set, please." And I've still got that at home too. It doesn't work, but I've still got that at home too. "I'd like an electric train set, please." And he didn't know that one before. But those that know me a little bit better will know where I've come from. I got the electric train set on Christmas morning one time. And that thing for 5 hours never stopped on Christmas morning till I ran the thing hot. With this transformer, you had a black Bakelite transformer. Well, our big thing weighed about 2 tonnes, literally, transformer, and a controller. I was right. I was happy. I was right. What are the things that helped me about that? I was starting to wake up and being watched. My father was watching me. I had a church life where I was tolerated in church, yes. I was tolerated. I say that because I could not involve myself in all the activities that the church did on a Sunday. They would go water skiing up the Hawkesbury River. That to me was useless. I couldn't water ski. I'd have to sit down with the little women, little ladies, and, you know, oh, bored stiff. In the end, I didn't bother going. Father would stay home with me. I had these things. My father was teaching me. I couldn't do my tie up, my boots up, because I had shoes that had knots. My father was one, he was ambidextrous, I'd say that now. Because what he did, he could tie a tie behind me without looking. Not even in a mirror. Tie a tie, do me shoelace up. Practice, 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 practice. Persevere, persevere. I'll turn that over to you. Persevere. Perseverance was the thing that got me where I am today. How did he help me? I hear you say. I'm watching the clock. It's all right. I'll get caught out here. He helped me by the little things in life. I had good parents, don't get me wrong. Lovely mother, nice father, as you can see. Both Adventists, they were born into the church too. My father persevered with me. Because he knew I wouldn't get anywhere unless he kicked me in the guards room, pushed me upstairs, you know. So I was given chores. One of the chores that I had at home in Concord, I had to mow a lawn about the size of this room. And it was couch grass. Couch. Now, you gentlemen know what couch does when it's wet. It rolls over. But in the 1950s, all my parents had was a Qualicast push lawnmower. And so I'd have to push the mower up here, back there, up here, back there, up here, and back there. About 25 to 30 times across. Up and down, you know, the one with the roller, the little things on the bottom. You push it. And it had a canvas grass catcher. I only had to do the front bit. I didn't have to do the bit down the side or the back or out the front. Just this bit. So I did it. But my father would come out on a Sunday and said, "No, no, that's not right. That's too long. You've got to do that again. Do that again. Not right. Do it again." The grass would flop over. Oh, here's little Ronnie, little crippled Ronnie, saying, "Oh, what are you doing, Dad? I don't have to do this. Just persevere." So I'd do it. He'd come back up about 5 times. Like, "Yeah, that's right. That'll do." So I did it. About every 2 weeks. I dreaded that on a Sunday morning. That was my job on a Sunday morning. You'd be taken out, all those sort of things during the weekend, manning and so forth. One day, about 2 or 3 years later, He called me down the backyard. He says, time to mow the lawn. Oh, here we go again. Little did I know that he'd done something in life that was also going to change my life considerably. So out of the back shed came Victor. Victor. Now Victor was invented in Concord. One of the early, I can tell you that's another story. Victor was invented in Concord, not far from where I lived, in about 1953. That's where it started. Out came Victor. He said to me, he said, you've been mowing the lawn pretty good. He said, but I'm going to get rid of that thing now. We're going to have a new lawnmower. Victor come to join us. So he took me up the front Sunday morning and he said to me, sit there and watch. And he put the fuel in, pump, whatever, and he started. And he went backwards and forwards once, down here, and came back. Down and back. Only once. He said to me then, he said, do you think you can do that now? Yes, Dad. Learning by it. Yes, Dad, I can do that. I then did that. Lawn. No worries. Dad, can I do outside the front gate on the verge? Right. I did that. Then I said, Dad, can I? You're not doing any more. I want to try out my lawnmower myself down the back, please. He said, I want you to make one promise. I want you to make a promise to me that you will never start that lawnmower if I am not here to watch you on a Sunday morning. Because he was protecting me to make sure that I didn't get hurt trying to pull the thing, because it would have been a two-stroke, you know, pull. He protected me. When I was mowing the lawn, after that time, he was always within earshot. You know, he was a good one for listening to machines because he worked in a paper bag packing. He could listen to that machine, and he'd listen to when I stopped and everything. He'd come up, you're right, but empty the bin, yeah, you're right. After that, unless there was anything seriously wrong, he never mowed a lawn in Concord ever again. Ever again. That was my job on a Sunday. You do that for me, oh, and he said, do you want to do the back too? Yes, please. I did the back too. I was right. I had my job on a Sunday. Then he said to me once years later, he said, I can go and do other things in the garden that you can't do on a Sunday, because being Adventist, you only get one day a week to do anything in the garden. Now, you know, work, fire, Sabbath, and then Sunday. That'll be done. That was an experience that I have lived to this day, because I was able to stand up and be counted in the church, in society, that I could do that. While this was going on, I was being taught other things. One night, when I was about six, two significant things happened in my life that I can remember vividly. The first one, up in New South Wales, it rains very heavily, with electrical storms very severely. One night, I saw with my father and parents in the open lounge room window, Venetians up, a fireball go down the street. A fireball. The ball would have been probably about as wide as that door and probably half as tall in the wind. Across the street, down the bottom of the street, across the road, and ended up in the back of the Repat Hospital, Concord, in the service centre, where they had coal, while this electrical storm was on. That opened my eyes right up. Surprised me, because I'd never seen anything like that before. The next morning when we went out there to have a look at the road, you could actually see where the fireball, about this wide, had gone down the street. It was that hot that it actually burnt the tar. That was a surprise to me. Another night, One night during a storm and electrical, you did something special for your to help your father. What did I do? I was about 6 years old. 6 or 7, something like that. I was in the lead iron. I had a brother and a sister that were younger than me. And about 6:15, my father never got home from work till about 7. That was the nature of his job. About 6:15 that night, a severe, dangerous electrical storm came up. Thunderstorm. Real bad. And a thunderstorm, you could be sitting or go to work in the morning like out there now, and 5 minutes later you can have a thunderstorm, a southeast coming in over Sydney Harbour, and whack, cops you. My father had gone off to work with no umbrella. Little me, my mother said to me, he's going to get soaked when he gets home. Little me chirps up, 6-year-old mind you, must have a thought, I'll go and get him. What do you mean? I'll take his umbrella up to the bus stop and get him. So I put on my little yellow hat, coat, whatever, shoes, put my thing back on, off I went up the street. I had to go up about 40 houses up the street. But at the end of the street, I had a problem because I had to cross Concord Road. Concord Road was a 4-lane highway which went from Strathfield towards Hornsby to go north. Cars, buses, everywhere. Everywhere. Whether or not my mother prayed that night, I don't know. I think she must have, because off I went out the door, about 6:20. Me, my little umbrella, big 16-rib umbrella, because those days you had the big 16-ribber, you know the ones I mean, 16-ribber, the big wide one, you know, you could put the thing up and end up in Hobart with a good wind. That's how good they were. Off I went. Lightning crashing, banging around. Mother probably on her knees praying or doing something, I don't know. I had to go up to the end of the street past what they called in those days a police box. Now a police box is about 4 times bigger than the phone box. And they had policemen going around on bikes and walking around, and they'd have to go into the room out the back, say a room, and they'd have to ring up their position that everything was all right in Baronia Street, Concord West, or Niagara Street, whatever. Everything was fine, and they'd go off. Well, I had to walk up past that and then cross over the main road. I did that. Lightning, thunder, whatever. Psh, bad, I got there. Crossed the road, because I had lights in 2 directions. I could get across. Now, I had enough sense as a 6-year-old that I had to cross a busy road. How do you do this? You watch this way and make sure there's no cars coming. Go halfway and stop. And that's what I did. Halfway stop, and then when there's nothing come this way, I was okay. I had to stand out there at the bus stop in the pouring rain and the storm for about 25 minutes. 25 minutes. I'm standing at the bus stop. Well, that's a model. My father came off the top deck of one of those. And I think he got a bigger surprise as I did by being up there, because he wasn't expecting to see me. He was not expecting to see me with an umbrella in the middle of a storm at the bus stop waiting to take him home, to keep him dry. That was something, very special moment that I had with my father. It lives with me to this day. I can tell another story of that, and I might close off with that later on. Because I had that same situation returned to me some 60 years later by my sister. Yes. He came off the bus. Once my father had come off that bus, I was happy because my father was there. I was right. I didn't care whether lightning or thunder or anything like that. I had my father's hand. I was across the road with him and I was home. But he got home dry. After that, if it rained in Concord or anything like that, one of us, me generally, was up the street with an umbrella waiting for dad. He knew. Now, he could have gone up one stop and got off the shops and waited, but he didn't. He got off there that night. What put him off the bus? It was me. I was led up there. The things that I've done, to be helped, was this. Well, I must start to wind up. I was lucky enough to have someone, parents, look after me. I was involved with church, JMVs, MVs, all that. I'd go every week, you'd have to walk. Did I miss that? Denominational history was another one, which is sadly missing in our churches today. That was something that was we were taught, denominational history. The next question I'm going to ask myself, what problems did you encounter with your right leg and your leg arm? Well, I've just mentioned that, about getting up and downstairs, but eventually, after about 2.5 years, it was taken off me. I was right. But I had to wear boots from that time onward. Because the boots from that time onwards have given me support in the ankle here. If I'm not very careful, the ankle will go over like that. If I haven't got the boot on, I'm in trouble. And so I live in boots. I make sure I've got a good pair of boots. No Nikes or anything like that could flop around or anything, slippers, just something nice. Oh, I've got a pair of slippers at home, but I very seldom wear them. The next question I'm going to ask myself, what could be done or could not be done with your right arm? What could be done? When I was growing up to the age of 10, I could have operation. But the orthopaedic surgeon told me very early, yes, and I'm about to finish, he could straighten that arm, he'd break this, he'd break that. But it would look like that for the rest of my life, down the side. In other words, I can put up with something like that down the side of my body for the rest of my life, or I can have this. That was when I was about 10 or 11. Now the Lord answered that for me, our family, in a very special way. The orthopaedic surgeon passed away. Problem solved. I never had another orthopaedic surgeon in my life. He saw me through thick and thin. But the Lord had answered a prayer. Don't touch this. If it works, use it. I can pick up things. Can't do everything, but I can pick up things. I'm able to manoeuvre that in, like that. That's all I can do. I can't bend this thumb. I can only do that. But I've managed to support myself, to look after. In life, you've got to look after yourself. Did I miss out on anything as a child in the first 10 years of my life? I would say absolutely not, because I had Christian parents that made sure that everything was there. To this day, I will say this. I have had 61 years extra life. Because somebody cared about me. Somebody cared. My parents cared about where I was going to do, what I was going to do. 61 years of life. At 71 years of age, single and proud of it, I'm happy. I've been able to get around. I've been able to do things. In 61 years, I have moved away from home. As I said, I only had two churches. I had some very decent pastors in Concord that brought me out. One in particular was Pastor Robert H. Parr. He's got me to where I'm sitting today through what he could say, you could do it, you could do it. Never give up, Pete, never give up. Did I miss out on anything as a child? No. What I want to say to you today is this. My father was a single worker on a single wage, and he was able to give us a home, Christian life,
food on the table, a holiday, and pay off a mortgage on a salary that I to this day don't know how he did. I do not know how he did it. I take my hat off to what those people in those days did back in the 50s and 40s. If you needed one and threepence or two shillings, you'd stay out and you'd earn it before you come home. But he did it. Paid off a house in Concord. But he was able to do that. All right, now finishing off, what advice would I give here today before I would finish off? I've put the advice on the board today and I'm just going to say a few more words. Never give up. Never. That was the thought that I want to go away from here today. No matter what our affliction is, as we studied in our lesson last week with Nahum, he had a but. He had leprosy. My life, I had a but also. But I have managed to turn my life around with the aid and the help of my earthly father and my spiritual father. In the remaining years of my life, I will then just wind up now to put this in context. I have only had four jobs. Four jobs. Paid jobs, that is. I had one job that was voluntary, and I'm still doing it. Love it. I worked in the paper trade in opposition to my father for about 30 years. Opposition. I had to keep my mouth shut because I knew what was going on in his place and he knew what was going on in mine. And I was involved with paper bags, cups, plates, doilies, greaseproof paper, glassine, foil, all that sort of thing. I grew up with that as a trade. Towards the end of my working life, I was poached by AWA in Sydney to come and join them for a few years. That didn't turn out so good after about 4 years because I lost my job again. But that was due to a gentleman called Christopher Scaife. Remember him? One day we were called into our office in North Ryde, and they had places in Sydney, at North Ryde, Leichhardt and Ashton. And one Friday afternoon, AWA sacked 5,500 employees in one go. You got your redundancy, but 5,500 people went out the door as a result of one man's greed. One man's greed. That hurt me, because in those days you were told that you had a job for life. You had a job for life. If you started good and you did everything right, your job was there for life. But that doesn't always work out in life. And so today, I was lucky in my life to be where I am today. I came down to Hamilton in 1990 to take care of my late sick mother. When she passed away, I stayed here. I class myself as a Hamiltonian now because I've been here for 25 years. I'm almost part of the furniture and fitting. So I'm told by some of the chemists in the town, you're one of us now. You got a Victorian license? Yes, you're one of us. Don't drive, but I've got one. So I would like to say this today in closing, because it's nearly lunchtime. Today in closing, I would like to encourage you to move forward with God no matter what your problems are, no matter how insignificant you think they are. God can help you overcome them. He helped me overcome mine. And I'm sure that we all have a but somewhere in our life, that we have some little problem that is irking us. Today, I can thank God that I've got diabetes. All right. Thank God, because when I was diagnosed with diabetes a few years ago, I thought I was going to die. Oh, God. Oh, gee. What am I going to hang around here for? I can't eat this. I can't go to Macca's. I can't have chips. I can't have that.
I can't have something else.
Oh, dear. What a pity. Then the penny dropped.
Oh.
When you've got to go shopping, you've got to look at the see the sugar content. Then you find that there are things you can eat and there are things you don't know. So today, if you don't see me eat much, I'm thinking of what's going in here because I've got to watch my sugar level. I've learned to live with my addiction. Just as Nahum lived with his leprosy, I've got mine, this, that and a few other things. I've learned to live with what I've got. And to be a blessing. If I said to myself today, Ronnie, what's the most blessed thing you can do in the society today? I would say this. I want to be a member of the Seventh-day Adventist Church here in Hamilton. To have friends. To be able to say, I'm one of you. I might have to go away from time to time. That's family tradition. That's something I can't do. I'm a member of the Seventh-day Adventist Church here in Hamilton. And I am proud of it. I want to be part of it. I'm not one to be sitting back in the back pew saying, oh yeah, I can't do this or I can't do that, like my father said to me, get out and do something. I've got to be up here doing a little bit. Whether I speak in front of, how many here today, or 70 men like I did the other night, it doesn't worry me. But if you'd have said to me 30 years ago, 35 years ago, get up in front of a church, I'd run, I'd be out the door and up on the bus and halfway to Ballarat before you get out the door. I was gone, not anymore. The Lord has put the inside my heart, the ability to be able to want to do and to spread the word. And so today, I close with the thought. Never give up. Never. Persevere at all times, which I've done, I tried to. Be persistent in all you hope and achieve. I've achieved things in life that I never thought I'd expect to do. Learning by observing is another one. Sure, I can't bang a nail into a paling on the wall, on the fence. But I found out if I drill a hole in the fence post paling, then I insert the nail, I can drive the nail home. Yeah, see? Yeah. Simple little things mean a lot. So today I want to encourage you now, because it's lunchtime. I want to encourage you to hang forth, to trust in the Lord, no matter what. And that is my prayer and my testimony here today, something that I have never done in 71 years. You were the first. This is the first time I've ever done it. And I'm proud to be able to bring that to you this morning. Thank you.